This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the Book on BFM 89.9.
Hello and welcome to Buy the Book. I'm Sharmila Ganesan, and as always, with me, fellow lover of magical worlds, Lee Chui Lin.
Hello.
And joining us remotely is Dania Nair of usually our news team, but today just also traversing into worlds filled with fancy. Thank you for joining us, Dania.
Thank you for having me on a book adventure with you guys.
So the reason we've asked Dania to join us today is because it is our monthly book club. And today we've decided to do something, I suppose, a little bit different. It's a serialized novel in some ways by J.K. Rowling, The Ichabod. And yes, we also recognize that J.K. Rowling is a person of controversy at the moment as well. And we'll maybe get a little bit into that in the later part of the show. But first, we're going to focus on, I guess it's really her very first children's book after Harry Potter, which she released in late May, chapter by chapter on theichabog.com, and it's just finished, and it will be released as a full book at the end of the year, but we've all just finished reading it, and we thought it'd be fun to kind of discuss it, both the experience of reading it as a serialized novel, as well as just revisiting a world that J.K. Rowling created.
Yeah, so I think that there are a few things that are special about it. Firstly, like you rightly point out, it is the return of J.K. Rowling into the world of children's fiction. For a while, you know, she did the whole Robert Galbraith thing. Mm-hmm. But there is also the fact that it was released in response to COVID-19 and to the pandemic. There's a reason why it's free, why it's available to read for anybody online. And also she had been asking readers to illustrate the book as they went along,
yes,
so that eventually when it's published, she would be able to have illustrations. And eventually when it's published, I think all her royalties are also going to benefit people who have been affected by COVID-19.
Yes, and I think the other thing that was that she's pointed out is that this was actually a story that she wrote quite a while ago, and according to her, just sat in her attic. She wrote it for her children, and it's only at this point in time that she decided that she would share it with the rest of the world. So quite a lot of things happening in terms of the background of this book, but maybe the best place to start would be as three Potterheads. How do we feel about another book by J.K. Rowling?
I mean, I'm just going to say that no one expected it to be another Harry Potter. Like, I think everyone realized it wasn't ever going to be that. But I still, when I started reading it, I could sort of feel myself dropping into that familiar sort of reading comfort, if I can describe it that way, which I used to feel when I used to read Harry Potter. It might just be her style of writing it, but when I started reading it, I immediately felt like, oh, I'm coming back to something.
No, I completely agree. I think there's something very distinctive about J.K. Rowling when she writes in this particular genre. Not so much in her literary fiction or even as Robert Galbraith, but when she writes about the worlds of young people, when she writes about worlds that involve magic, there's a very particular style. And I completely get what you mean by that familiarity, because I also felt it. It almost felt warm. I felt like I was back in the embrace of somebody familiar.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that that's an important point also to bring up Harry Potter, because there is a little bit of confusion here, because it's not a world that is part of the larger magical landscape of Harry Potter, but it does have fantasy elements, right? Because the Ichabod itself is a sort of mythical creature where through the book, its very existence is debated. Nobody knows whether it's real, not real, what it can do, what it looks like, what it likes to eat, very crucially. And I think because of that element of fantasy, there is a little bit of, okay, this isn't Harry Potter, we know that. But also, this feels like J.K. Rowling. This feels like, I think you could have read this piece not knowing who wrote it and said, this sounds like a familiar voice to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this would be a good time to maybe summarize what the book is about. It is set in a land called Cornucopia, and it tells the story of, as you said, Lynn, a mythical quite terrifying, a mythical creature of terrifying reputation called the Ichabog, which everyone says lives in this particular area in the land. And the whole story is structured as it's a story of how the legend of the Ichabog is used to manipulate and control the people of its land, a land that when we first encounter it is a land of plenty and joy and happiness, but as we get into the story, becomes quite a miserable place to live in because it benefits the rulers to use the Ichabog as the bogeyman to control its people. So it is a children's story, but really there's a lot of layering of political aspects. There's a lot of critique on government systems, which I think is something that Rowling does do very well.
Yeah, and actually that was quite confusing to me because when I was reading the book and seeing all these themes sort of pop up consistently throughout the book, I was thinking to myself, is this really a book for children? Because I think, if I remember correctly, it's aimed at younger children sort of between the ages of 7 to 9, if I'm remembering that correctly. And if I were that age reading that book, I don't know if I would sort of pick out those themes anyway. I mean, I wouldn't know the themes, the actual terms for those topics, but I think the only thing I would take from it is, you know, what is right and what is wrong, as opposed to, you know, political statements separate in a children's book.
Yeah, I think that that's a really interesting point because this was meant to be a read-along book. I think that J.K. Rowling had said that when she first conceptualized the story, it was as a read-along story, you know, for herself as a mom. And I guess the opportunity there is to talk to your 7-year-old about taxation. that's one way to look at it. But I agree, I don't necessarily think of this as a 7 to 9-year-old kind of book for reasons that I think we're going to get into.
It's not just because it deals with fairly complicated ideas of what a ruler is or what propaganda is, you know, all of which is part of this book, but also because there's some genuinely difficult themes that are in this book, you know, deaths and violence and just generally scary things that I would hesitate to kind of throw a child into without warning.
Yeah, and I guess you'd really have to be prepared to sit, like Lynn said, to sit with your child and sort of go through those themes. I think reading this book means having to explain life maybe to your child when you're reading it. And I guess it's not a bad thing, but also a sort of additional experience to reading a book.
Because we touched on this a little bit earlier, the rough outline of the story, but essentially, through a series or through a web of lies in many ways, this lovely little country of Cornucopia ends up becoming impoverished and sad. And that's sort of the larger systemic story of what's happening. And then on a very human level, there are families being torn apart. There's a lot of death. I mean, the story kind of hinges on a few important adults passing away, really. It's not a spoiler to say that. And that affects the way that our heroes, I suppose, the younger adults, the way that they think about what's happening in the world and what's happening in the country. And I think that those things, they are very classic fairy tale ideas. If you think about it, right, like most fairy tales hinge on parents passing away. But I think there is a sort of rampantness, you know, in this book that makes it different because it happens a lot. There is a lot of death. Mm.
I think if you are familiar with Harry Potter and if you remember how you remember all the big characters that kind of die along the way, this is almost a condensed version of that because each chapter is pretty short and you can get through the whole book in, I think, a few hours. And because of that, you're kind of really fairly assaulted with these characters being brutalized or killed and even some supplementary characters who kind of die and you are told in no uncertain terms they died quite horrible deaths. And I don't mean any of that to say that the book isn't good or isn't a good read, but it is that kind of read.
And to be honest, I sort of feel, again, with regards to J.K. Rowling's writing style, that this trope of, you know, of parents dying or people who are close to you dying seems a bit of a crutch for me at least, whenever when I was reading it, it was sort of like a familiar, like, ah, I know the story sort of situation. Mm. And I guess it isn't a bad thing, because I guess it's also sort of drawing from her own experience with her mother passing away and things like that. But when I read it, I thought like, oh, this is just another, like, a familiar plot point to move the story forward. And also, I guess it sort of reflected COVID itself, I guess, with what's going on in the world. So maybe that's why, you know, good idea to release it during this time as well.
We are talking about The Ichabod by J.K. Rowling, which is a free novel, a free book for children that she released online, which you can read now at theichabod.com. And we're talking about it for this month's book club with Dania Nair. We'll be back shortly after a break. This is By the Book on BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Buy the Book with me, Sharmila and Lynn. And joining us for our monthly book club, fellow Potterhead and J.K. Rowling's writing fan, at least, Dania Nair. And we are discussing Rowling's return in many ways to the world of children's literature with The Ichabod, which she's released for free online in a serialized form, a special world pandemic release where she, where the idea was that parents could kind of read along this book with their children. And we kind of outlined, I suppose, both the premise of the book and also our initial reactions to reading it. But I think maybe we can go into the aspect of, it sounds like all of us really did enjoy it. And I'm curious to hear from you guys, why? What exactly about it are you taking away in terms of the positives?
One of the main things that I quite enjoyed was the naming of the three cities in the book, which I don't know if it's a spoiler to say the names, but they are connected to food, which I am a big fan of. And I think always that magic and food go hand in hand together when you're telling a story. So I thought having that sort of in the book itself and connected to, I guess, people's livelihoods was a very sort of charming thing for me. And I think it was sort of nice to see how she expanded on that. And I thought I liked the character of Daisy very much. I think Daisy is a very good, you know, figure, especially for young girls, especially in, we have so many books that are populated by, you know, male characters as the hero. And I think it was a good idea to have that. And I don't know if J.K. Rowling did that to oppose her Harry Potter legacy, but I really enjoyed that for me.
I thought that it was just a really, really engrossing story. You know, I kind of entered this not exactly sure what to expect. I think we talked about that, right? It's like, ooh, you know, are we back? You know, is this a new world? What's going on? So I didn't really know how things were going to go. And then what I found is that there is sort of a central mystery at the heart of the book, which is whether or not the Ichabod is real. And that, along with all the other things about what's going to happen, you know, are our heroes going to prevail? That really pulled me along. So by the time I read it, everything had been released. But I think that if I had started, and I think that it changes the reading experience, because for me, knowing that I could read all 64 chapters at a sitting made it a little, you know, kind of pulled me along a little bit faster, because if there were some chapters that were maybe a little bit more world expanding and therefore not so focused on the plot, I'm like, it's fine. You know, there's still the next chapter. But I think maybe if I had read it on a chapter to chapter, week to week kind of basis, there were some moments where potentially I might have wondered where it was going. But because I didn't have that, because I could read it like a book, I just enjoyed it so much. The story was, it's a good story, well told. I couldn't ask for more from a kids' book.
Yes, and I think that's a great point. One of the things with children's literature is, and I'm not saying this as a minimizing thing, I think it's important that things make sense on many levels. And one of the things that comes through so strongly for me in this book is the idea of kindness, the idea of being good, the idea of truth. And I think those are very important things to teach young people. And a book like this does that so well. But at the same time, you're absolutely right, Lynn. It's a great story. It's a great world to live in. It's not Hogwarts. It's very different. And I'm fine that it's not. I don't need more of that world. And I'm really glad that she she came up with a different world that I honestly would be quite happy to have more stories from. You know, Dania, you talked about the different lands that she talks about. She writes about different people and the kinds of jobs they do. So this is a little bit more, I think the structure is a little bit feudal or medieval. So there's a king, there are people who are, you know, captains or you know, different people who run in. So the world is very different. And I think for me, if it's a world that I want to revisit or I'm happy to be in, it means that it was a job well done.
Yeah, to be honest, even like when I also got a chance to read the book when it was completely out, and I think if it had, if I just read it chapter by chapter, I would have like gone a bit mad, because I think especially the first, at least half of the book, there's a lot of I guess depressing tones because of the things that are happening in the book. So I'm the kind of person where I need to see the turn in mood, I guess, from like bad to sort of like a saving grace from the characters. So I was quite happy to have it all at once. And I think it's always a sign of a good book if when you start reading it, you have to finish it in that moment, as opposed to books where you just want to keep them away for a while. So I had a good time reading the book.
I think the other thing to talk about here are the themes, because like any good fairy tale, there is a message behind it, right? You know, it's a good story, but beyond that, she's also trying to communicate something. She's also trying to impart values and to talk about what is important and why the way we behave ends up shaping the world. And I think that again is done in a classic, slightly, maybe a little lectury kind of J.K. Rowling tone, which again, if you're accustomed to Harry Potter and the idea of speaking honesty, for example, how important that is to the Potter universe, then you will know that it won't be a surprise to you to know that this book also has that in spades. It's incredibly important that you speak the truth. It's incredibly important that you are brave, that you are kind. And we spoke earlier about all the reasons why maybe it might be challenging for 7 to 9-year-olds to absorb this story, or for parents to want to engage with it with their kids. But I think that looking at these themes, these make it really, this is a lovely way of talking about those ideas. And I think that those sorts of things, this good versus evil thing, is very easily absorbed within the story and by kids. I thought it was done very simply and well.
And one of the reasons being because she starts with kids. The primary, I suppose that the protagonists in some ways of the story, even though actually it's a story that runs across many different characters. So, but if you want to talk about the two kids at the heart of it, which are Bert Beamish and Daisy Dovetail, they are that age when we first meet them. They're about 8, I think, when we first get to know them. But even though the book is quite short, they age quite a bit through the course of the story. But in that sense, a lot of the struggles that they go through in the early years and the things that they feel when things are difficult around them is something that kids that age would be able to identify with. And I think that's something that Rowling is good at. The fact that she ages them as the story goes along is a way for many kids of many ages to be able to identify with them as well.
Yeah, and I think the way that, I guess with every children's book, there's always a sort of feeling of things that children understand that adults don't. And I think she did that very well. I don't really understand, but I guess they were more kind, or they're more open to things. And I like that sort of beginning to them. And also as they started to grow up, understood that, you know, the complexities of living in an adult world, even with all their innocence, that, you know, eventually does, you know, shine through at the end of the book.
Yes, and I think that there are some unspoken conflicts that happen, or conflicts that kind of stem from very, very crucial and easy to understand why they're happening, misunderstandings. And it happens between adults. So Mrs. Beamish and Mr. Dovetail, mm-hmm. You know, the parents of our protagonists, also have a falling out over, you know, a tragedy that happens in the book and what caused that tragedy. And that kind of flows down to their kids, who are best friends. But when they fight, it's so real. I think that along with what you just said, Dania, this idea of kids being able to identify with children's emotions and how maybe adults can't always access that, I think they should also, a good children's book should also be able to access that big feelings, these big feelings that children go to with a capital B, capital F. And a good author and a good book should be able to capture that because it's so crucial. It comes down to that whole, you don't get it. And that was really beautifully played out.
Mm. We are running out of time, but I think I want to end this on perhaps the question that most people would ask and is not the most fair of questions. Would you call this a return to form for J.K. Rowling? I mean, it is her first foray into writing anything for younger people since Harry Potter. I'm sure the expectations are really high. Do you think that this lives up?
Well, I think I went into it with low expectations because I didn't want to, you know, hype myself up too much about it. But I still think it is a successful return. I haven't actually read her adult books, but from what I've spoken to people, they were in sort of a mixed reception, I guess. But I think this is her forte. And I think regardless of whether she's writing in Harry Potter or outside the Harry Potter universe, this will connect to kids. And I think it'll be very popular among kids as well. Because if I could think of a criticism for this book, I would only say that maybe the end was wrapped up very quickly. You know, all the plot lines sort of, you know, fit really well together suddenly. That was my only complaint. But otherwise, if I was a kid, I would have had a really fun time reading this, as I did now.
Look, I loved The Ichabod. I really enjoyed it. I didn't know necessarily what to expect. And I think maybe like you, Dania, I was holding back. But I would wholeheartedly recommend it to anybody who enjoys fairy tales, fantasy, a good story. And if you have a child that you think is ready, I think, to grapple with the inevitabilities of life, death and taxes, then, you know, The Ichabod is the one.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I laughed, I cried, I gasped, I bit my nails in suspense. I mean, what more do you want out of a book that really takes you on such an emotional journey and leaves you feeling like you want more of this world that you just inhabited, right? So we have been talking about J.K. Rowling's The Ichabod, which is a serialized children's book that she released online for free at theichabod.com. So you can actually check out the whole thing there. It's 64 chapters. And it's also accompanied by an illustration competition that children can participate in because eventually in November, they're going to release a book that compiles all of the chapters as well as the winning illustrations that were sent in. So let us know if you've read it, if you're planning to read it. Are you a fan of J.K. Rowling's writings? You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Or you can write to us at buythebook@bfm.my. And that brings us to footnotes, and I think perhaps a sharp veer in tone from what we were talking about earlier, because we were talking about The Ichabod by J.K. Rowling, but we can't ignore that J.K. Rowling is also embroiled in a pretty big online storm at the moment. And we initially didn't particularly want to go there, but we could not either, because it is happening and it is a reality for many people who are fans of Rowling growing up to have to deal with this now.
I'm just going to jump in.
Thank
here.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you for rescuing me.
No, because, so essentially I think we've been seeing, I think just to give a little bit of a timeline, in the past we've seen J.K. Rowling return to interfere with the Harry Potter universe that she's built, right? Coming back in with, oh, it turns out, you know, Dumbledore's sexual orientation. Nobody asked, let me tell you, you know, Hermione, yes, of course, she can be anything. You know, it's so there has been this conversation, and I think it's been received with, despite the fact that I think it's an attempt to try and infuse more inclusivity into the world. It has been viewed, and I think also rightly, as a too little too late and somewhat disingenuous, right? Mm. It's not necessarily been a thought through contribution or a thought through change to the story. And if you really meant it, you could have written it into the books. Subsequently, she has also more recently made comments about gender, about trans people, and about the importance of, I guess, preserving womanhood as its own category. And she's kind of fired off a tweet. She's written op-eds about it. It's been a lengthy exchange, I think, in many ways.
Yes, and it's also brought about a huge amount of backlash, particularly online, from people who are actually fans of her works. And I think that's what makes this interesting, because you have a whole generation of people who grew up reading Rowling's works, who now find themselves in the odd position of disagreeing with her views. Now, wherever you stand in terms of whether you agree completely, perhaps you might see some sense in what she says, perhaps you disagree, I think that that's a difficult place to find yourself in, where you love the world she created, but you don't love the person who created that world anymore. And how do you then contend with that?
Well, for me personally, I think I had already, in the beginning, before even all this controversy had happened, I had already sort of started becoming a bit disengaged from her with everything that was coming out, even with all the Harry Potter stuff, add-ons that were coming. And I think slowly I found myself thinking as Harry Potter as a separate entity. And I think I'd also been prepared for it for my experience with Enid Blyton as well, which sort of also has her colored past. And I think it sort of made me realize that, you know, just because someone creates something you love, maybe it doesn't always mean you should idolize that person, and it's okay to question that person. So I've sort of started seeing Harry Potter as something that is separate from the author.
Well, Dania, actually, can I ask you, you know, when you were sort of first starting to read Harry Potter, because you're younger than Sharmila and I, so when you first started reading it, you would have been at a different age and you would have been engaging with it also at a different level, because I read it as a teenager. I think it's very different
then.
Yeah,
for me as well.
And so for you, right, when you were engaging with J.K. Rowling, what was that relationship initially like before it started to change?
Oh, it was great. I can't even describe what an impact it's been like. It was sort of entering something that I didn't know I was missing. And it was, you know, built in inclusivity and kindness, you know, and seeing all these characters maybe having the same sort of problems, not magic-wise, obviously, but emotionally. You know, it felt like I was, as many other kids would attest to, growing up with an invisible friend in your pocket that you could take out and read if you needed comforting. So it was such a huge impact on me that when I started, you know, sort of separating myself from J.K. Rowling, and not necessarily the books, but it felt like, this may be a bad example, maybe like a divorce was happening in my house, you know. It felt like that, like traumatizing almost.
Mm. The thing that got me thinking about this whole issue is actually this idea of how one thing can end up defining you. And for in Rowling's case, oddly, that one thing for her was actually the Potterverse for a really long time. And now it almost seems like this one thing is going to be her opinion on trans rights. And I'm conflicted. Honestly, I'm conflicted because there's a lot of things that J.K. Rowling has talked about or championed or continues to champion that I think speak very highly of her choices in terms of what she can do to help the world. I don't necessarily agree with her opinions when it comes to these issues, for instance. But should a person end up being defined by just the one thing I don't agree with is my struggle with this whole thing.
Mm. I think for me, it's always been slightly different because, and the reason why I asked you, Dania, about your relationship just now is because I love Harry Potter, I love the books, but I've never related to J.K. Rowling on a personal authorial level. So when she started being disappointing, you know, and I'm not talking about the current situation, but you know, previously when she started saying things that I was like, really? I'm not sure I need that. I was able to just divorce that very cleanly. Mm. It's like, no, the books live on their own, and J.K. Rowling is now an author who's has always been an author. She's going off to make other things. That's fine. So my separation has always been quite clean. So in that sense, I'm able to look, I think, at her books as, you know, the books and their messages of inclusivity, of kindness, of warmth, which have carried through all the way as entirely separate to J.K. Rowling, the public figure. And so because of that, my feelings about it are less fraught. And to your point, J.K. Rowling is middle-aged. You know, she's not at the end of her life. And despite the fact that we're talking about cancellations as if they are final, I think the truth of the matter is, like you said, she continues to contribute in many ways to important causes, to champion single parents, to try to abolish orphanages. You know, she's donating to COVID-19 efforts. I don't think this will ultimately be her legacy. It feels like a big deal now, but everything feels like a big deal at the moment. We're all a little raw.
No, I agree. And actually, Dania, there's one thing that I wanted to wrap up with, and I think you might be in a good position to answer this. For me, when I lose faith or lose connection with a writer, I actually find it very difficult to reread their works. People like Orson Scott Card, whose books I loved Ender's Game when I was younger, I cannot read them now because of how he subsequently turned out to be. But that seems to be easier for you. And I'm curious as to why. You're okay with revisiting the Harry Potter universe, the Ichabod, you clearly liked it. Is that easy for you to do?
I think it's easy, but sort of in the back of my mind, even as I was reading the Ichabod with its, you know, its themes of kindness, in the back of my head, it feels like, oh, but this doesn't seem like something you're reflecting right now, at least, you know, J.K. Rowling. So it's always going to be in the back of my mind. With Harry Potter, anyway, I think it's slightly easier because I feel like my brain and maybe to some extent the way I write and think is wired to what I read in Harry Potter. And even once I left, you know, once we finished the books, you know, I would constantly, you know, I think J.K. Rowling has her famous speech on failure when she's addressing a group of university students. I used to like watch that a lot, you know, to sort of learn from it and what she thought of, you know, how people should live their lives. So it has sort of change that in a bit, but with Harry Potter anyway, I don't think I'll ever be able to completely let it go because of how much it stayed to me. With other books, maybe that will change. Ichabod was still an okay experience for me in those terms, but I'll have to wait and see if she comes up with anything else and how I respond to that. But Harry Potter is an always, you know, always thing, I guess.
Thank you, Dania, for joining us. It was great fun reading this and then talking about it with you.
Let's do it again sometime.
Definitely. So we've been talking about, first we talked about J.K. Rowling's Ichabod, but, you know, in our footnotes, we were addressing some of the current online backlash that she's been facing for expressing her views on gender and the trans community.
Yeah.
So let us know if you've been following this. You know, has this affected the way you think about her or her work? You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Or you can write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.